Buenos dias, yet again. Welcome to another episode of Days of Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings from the archives that I am re-uploading in podcast form. How exciting. This is another episode from the olden days of last year, specifically the 26th of November 2024. Again, the original had quite a bit of music that I can't re-upload in podcast form, tragically, so I've had to remove all of that, and you are yet again left with my voice in nothing more than a cavernous void. But don't fret, it's still the same podcast as before, and hopefully you enjoy it for the next 30 minutes you're listening to it. Yeah, I'm gonna stop recording now. Okay, bye.
Daisy.
Daisy.
Midweek Movie Mumblings. Oh yes.
Hello, good and fine people of Cambridgeshire and beyond, and to my lovely listeners. Hope you're having a wonderful Wednesday morning so far. It's me, Daisy, your boy, back with another episode of Day's Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings for your listening pleasure. Hope, you know, you're doing great. We're midway through the week, nearly at the end of Cambridge Michaelmas term. This is my final ever Michaelmas. This is my fourth and final one. It's a mosh, guys, it's a mosh, but we're nearly at the end now. I've got an essay I need to get up early and write tomorrow, so when you're listening to this. So hopefully I'm up doing that now by the time you're listening to this, question mark, but we'll see. Anyway, this week we're going to go through some film releases, recent things that have come out in the cinema. Normally I just go through the last three films I've watched, but I've watched quite a lot of films recently, so rather than me having to talk about the Paul Greengrass Jason Bourne 2016 film that I watched the other night while crocheting, which I'm not that opinionated on, I thought it would be more fun to just, you know, be topical for once. We're going full Kimono May and we're talking about some recent releases that I've seen. Specifically Smile 2, the new horror film by Osgood Perkins. Then we have got Gladiator 2, which, you know, Ridley Scott's back at it again. Then we've got Paddington in Peru without Paul King, question mark. We'll see how that goes. And then finally, we have got Wicked, which is the John M. Chu film that everyone has been raving about, question mark. Have you been holding space with Wicked 2024? That's something we're going to find out. Have I been holding space with it? I don't know. Maybe I held space with it in the 2.5 hour long runtime, but we'll see. As per usual on this show, today's show is pre-recorded, which means I unfortunately won't be able to read your messages as they come in live. Please do send in a message though. If you are listening to this live, you can go to www.camfm.co.uk/player. That's www.camfm.co.uk/player to send me in a message. Alternatively, you can message my Instagram directly at Daisy's Magical Mystery Mix, especially if you're listening to this on catch up. That is the best way to reach me. Alternatively, whether or not you're listening live or on catch up, email me via DM mm@camfm.co.uk. I'd always love to hear from your feedback, tell me your thoughts on the films, and maybe I'll feature in next week's show. But for now, I'm going to let our trailer clips take it away as I talk about our first film, Smile 2. Enjoy. Please keep your hands and feet inside of the web player / FM radio broadcast at all times, and enjoy this. Bye.
Daisy's Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings on Cam FM.
I need you to listen to me.
Something really bad happened.
You remember Louis Fergoli?
From high school?
I went to his apartment. But when I showed up...
Louis? He was smiling at me.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sky Riley, you are in the middle of a big world tour.
You okay?
I keep seeing his face everywhere.
This thing is a parasite. You witnessed a death. Now it's latched onto you.
Boo! Ah! Oh my god, horror film, yes! So, if you were listening to my last show on Days of Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings, you'll be aware that I spoke about Smile, the original, from 2022, also directed by Osgood Perkins. You know, an interesting film, a big studio horror film that took a lot of swings, made a lot of misses, but at the same time, when it comes to big studio horror films, you want a film that's going to be more experimental about it. Horror itself is a very polarizing genre, let's face it. Some people love it, like me. Some people absolutely hate it. You know, regular contributor to the show, in absentia, Clay, who I often go to the cinema with, for example, does not like horror films, which I totally vibe with, totally chill with that, you know. Although, you know, just saying. Anyway, it's something I've learned to live with. But, you know, horror itself as a genre, very polarizing. So, when you, a lot of the time you do get very bland, boring studio horror films that don't try and do anything new with the formula. They're just kind of like, well, we'll just throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. And it's just so boring to see. I mean, the biggest culprit in this aspect is Blumhouse, who are the very big production company behind Insidious, Sinister, things like of that ilk, The Purge, I think they did as well. Although they've started reaching out into slightly more experimental horror films like Get Out. But Smile kind of represented. I mean, I don't think Blumhouse distributed Smile. In fact, I'm almost certain they didn't. No, I know they didn't distribute They didn't distribute Smile, not Blumhouse. They do distribute themselves. But anyway, that's besides the point. I found Smile a really interesting new horror film. Again, it doesn't try to completely rewrite the book, which is a shame because there are some very creepy elements to it. I found the whole premise of the original film is that like there's a spirit, there's like a ghost that follows you around if you see someone commit suicide in very strange, well, they're possessed by this evil entity, and then if you witness that, they're going to haunt you and then you die after. It's very Ring adjacent, you know, if anyone remembers the original Ring, you know, etc. And so the sequel came out, Smile 2. Everyone's been raving about it. Everyone's been saying, oh my god, it's really experimental, it's really interesting. I think it had a slightly different buzz to the first one, but both films had buzz in terms of how good they were. So I took Lyra, who has been on this show before, along to our local view to watch it. And one thing I really didn't like about this new Smile is how many jump scares there are in it. So like, I love horror films, but I despise jump scares. Jump scares like, huh! It's like when you do like a sudden thing to shock someone, and it's like, well, that's not scary. You're just like tapping into my involuntary flight or fight response that I've developed as a result of being a member of the human race over millennia. You know, that's not scary. I love a good atmospheric horror film that really like actually tries to bring something new to the table and just freaks you out by virtue of how scary it is. And there are some images in the original Smile that are genuinely quite scary. So when the main character is hallucinating this ghost, and they let the kind of visual effects department go completely crazy with it, those moments are great. And the moments like that in Smile 2, particularly at the climax of this film, are absolutely fantastic. If you're a weirdo like me who loves body horror, the climax of this film, you will be in hysterics. It's funny, it's camp, it's gory, it's horrifying. It reminded me a bit of The Substance in a lot of ways. I mean, if it was more protracted and more self-aware, it would be like more similar to The Substance. But it's a good ending to the film. It's a very standard horror kind of structure. You know, a lot of things happen in this film that I feel are very unnecessary. So this film is 2 hours long, and I feel a lot of that could have been stripped out, particularly the jump scares and the kind of less creepy, atmospheric-y, horror-y bits. There are some moments, so the main conceit of this film is that it's like about a pop star, which obviously you immediately know is going to get memed to hell by the studio, which is a bit cringe. But what can you do? It's a big studio horror film, etc., etc. But again, I did like it. I would recommend going to see it. You know, I did think it was fun, all in all. But don't be surprised if it does like completely rewrite the, you know, whole textbook on horror. One thing I did really like about this film, though, in the climax, is that it used practical effects. And if you know anything about me, you'll know that I love me a bit of practical effects. So booyakashan, love that. Anyway, loved it. Well, didn't love it. Sort of loved it, some aspects of it. Didn't like some aspects of it. All in all, if you're looking for a good horror film to watch, I would recommend Smile 2. If it's still playing in cinemas near you, I will be watching Heretic at some point soon, the Hugh Grant one, but I haven't got around to it yet. But anyway, so yeah, I would recommend. Thumbs up, but don't think it's going to rewrite, you know, the book or anything on horror films. Here's this next film here.
It is an art.
Choosing gladiators.
They're usually prisoners of war.
I claim this city for the glory of Rome.
You have something in you.
Rage.
Never let it go. It will carry you to greatness.
I own you now. But whose head could I give you to satisfy your fury?
The general will do. Rome has taken everything from me. But I will have my vengeance.
There is plenty of pain waiting for you in the next life. I don't know why you are so greedy for it in this one.
Oh my god, Gladiator 2, what's Daisy going to think about this? Honey, the classicists have been well fed this season, let me tell you. Yes, so a little known fact about me, I guess if you know me in real life, it's quite well known, but if you're just listening to this on the radio, you might not know this. I do classics, so I attend this university in this beloved city called Cambridge, and I study classics, and I'm in my fourth year of that now because I didn't have Latin A-level, so I spent a year of my life learning Latin. I specialise now in Roman history, specifically to do with the emperors. Wonder if that's going to become relevant in this sequel. Gladiator 2. Of course I was going to go see this. It's my moral duty as a classicist, as a studier of ancient history and Latin, to go and see any time Hollywood tries to interpret the classics on screen. There's a paper called Classics Live, fun fact, in the classics faculty at the moment, where they study reception, so you know how classics is received in the modern day. And they all got to go and see Gladiator 2 for free. I didn't, and I don't do that paper. No, I was not about to change my paper choices for the final year of my degree just so I could see Gladiator 2. But I was tempted. I went and saw this. I went and paid my fairest earned English pennies and pounds to go and see this. And it was okay. It was very boring. I wish it was more camp. I wish it was more like just in on it, right? I am someone who didn't necessarily enjoy the first Gladiator so much. Is that because I'm a classicist and anything that isn't historically accurate I'm going to hate? Absolutely not. I wish this was less historically accurate, to be honest with you. It was the moments in this film that you might have already read about in the press where they completely throw out any form, any semblance of historical accuracy that made me laugh, made me smile, and just made me enjoy the film more. So, you know, reading a newspaper in the middle of the Roman Forum, love it. Paul Mescal fighting sharks in the Colosseum. Hilarious. Amazing. Him being the great grandson of Marcus Aurelius. Spoilers. Although it's not really a spoiler, it's kind of like publicized everywhere. I don't know. I really enjoyed, there were aspects of this that I really enjoyed. And I just wish they were just more, you know, free in being completely balls to the wall, to quote myself from last week, which I'm pretty sure I can still say at 9 a.m. in the morning on a Wednesday. There were so many Ridley Scottisms in this. In the very first episode, I realised, by the way, of Days of Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings, I talked about Napoleon, which was his latter half of 2023 film. He's been really pumping out these historical epics with Joaquin Phoenix, which is the last film and probably the only film in the last 5 years I've actually fallen asleep during. It was so boring. The battle sequences, the fighting, the special effects, all of that is incredible. And you kind of come to expect that with a Ridley Scott production. However, Gladiator 2, where it had those moments of like deft fighting and cool action scenes and Paul Mescal fighting a shark, there were so many just boring scenes. And if you're not going to go for historical accuracy, why do you have long sequences of people talking to each other? Why do you have these incredibly drawn out dramatic monologues that are so self-referential and so reliant on the first film that you have like these really weird CGI flashbacks to the first film? It makes absolutely no sense to me. Also, I've just been like enunciating really hard and like doing loads of like hand gestures, and I'm sat by my window right now, and these two women who were walking past just like were staring at me, and I think they were there's no way they could have known I was getting this heated over Gladiator 2. But anyway, I would say see it if you're a fan of the original. Like, for example, I know the original is one of my brother's favorite films of all time, shout out Fred, so I know he's gonna go see it. But yeah, a bit disappointing. I can't really say I'm disappointed, though, because I kind of knew I'd have this reaction to it. I knew I'd be a bit bored by it. Ridley Scott's most recent films have always been a bit like, ugh, a bit like, you know, dry bread with a cup of water. It's like, okay. You know, I wouldn't particularly vibe with them. But at the same time, the battle scenes are excellent. The campness, when it is there, is hilarious, and I very much enjoyed that. There are some line deliveries in here that are just pure cheese and that I will be quoting for the rest of my life. Shout out to my disc supervisor who I quoted one of the lines to the other day. But it's no Megalopolis. I have seen Megalopolis. Maybe I'll talk about it on here at some point. It is a camp masterpiece. Don't get me wrong, but this is not that. I would recommend, if you're interested in the original, if you've never seen the original, I wouldn't bother with it, personally. Anyway, here is our next film. Enjoy.
Thank you for using Photo Me.
Oh, not at all. Thank you for having me.
Make sure your face is within the red circle.
Oh.
Paddington, there's a letter from Peru.
Dear Paddington, your Aunt Lucy.
She's gone, and we have no idea where she is.
She raised me when I was orphaned as a cub.
If you ever get lost, just roar.
I know I can find her.
It's not as if we can drop everything and fly to Peru.
To inflate your life, Jackie.
I didn't mean now, Paddington.
So, Paddington in Peru. Paddington is back. Or is he? So, I was not expecting this film. I know that there have been whisperings of a third Paddington in the air for a while now. Well, ever since 2017 when the original film came out. Well, the sequel. 7 years ago. I feel so old. You know, I was obviously going to go see it. To quote Ali Plum, who I saw in person, you know, not going to lie. You know, it is one of the Paddington 2 in particular is one of the best films of all time. No questions asked. You know, Hugh Grant is in it. The whole cast is there. Hugh Grant's in it. You know, just an all around amazing film, in my humble opinion. However, Paddington in Peru, as I say, it comes out 7 years after the second Paddington. The first one came out in 2014, second one in 2017. In my head, it wasn't that long of a gap. I know it is a 3-year gap, but they just felt so connected. They felt so purposeful. Like, you watch the first one, you're like, okay, a sequel makes perfect sense. You watch the second one, and you're like, that is where this story ends. Then you watch the third one 7 years later, and you're like, Why are we doing this? So a really big change here is that the director of the original two films, Paul King, who really did manage to catch that lightning in a bottle, incredibly well thought through, wholesome, but not trite, keyword, formula for the Paddington films. He's gone. Simon Farnaby as well, who is in this as a flight attendant, you know, My Horrible Histories icon. Their involvement in this project is dramatically reduced. Instead, the director, Dougal Wilson, steps into the helm. This is his first major motion picture, as far as I can tell. He's directed some stuff in the past, but nothing of this scale, put it that way. He mainly does music videos for, like, Coldplay and Massive Attack. I mean, that's cool as hell, can I just say? A big fan of the Massive Attack music videos. But I wouldn't have put him down for a Paddington threequel, I guess, if we can call it that. Yeah, it's a very, very flawed film. It's not a bad film. Let me put that out there. I think a lot of people weren't waiting to see this and hoping it would be bad. So it could be like, ah, yes, the black sheep of the Paddingtons. They tried to bring back this beloved film franchise and it completely failed. It is very much not that. It is not a complete and total failure. Wow, that's glowing criticism, glowing praise even. Put that on the DVD box art from Daisy Cox. It's not truly terrible. It's an average, a slightly above average, family-friendly, wholesome kids' fare, which would be fine if it wasn't a sequel to two of the best films of the past 20 years. Like, it's a bit, you know, again, this was always going to be a very troubled release, I feel. I think if it came out, like, again, if it had that, like, 2014, 2017, 2020, but again, I realised they couldn't have really released it in 2020 because of COVID, but if it did have that kind of douche, like, you know, sequence of production, I mean, I wouldn't have even mind if it came out in, like, 2021, 2022, because at least then it's like, okay, you were disrupted for COVID, that's absolutely fine, but at least then it would have kind of felt planned, it would have felt earned. I'd say the worst part of this film is in the end credits, they have like a post-credit scene where Hugh Grant's character from the second film is brought back. And it just felt so like they didn't need to bring back Nicole Kidman, who is the principal antagonist in the first film in the end credits, because they'd done enough in their own film. They'd brought enough of their own story in the sequel to the table to not have to then egregiously bring back a beloved character from the first film to kind of justify that film's existence. Whereas here they do, which is just such a shame. Something I did want to flag, by the way, is when I saw the trailers for this and stuff, I thought Olivia Colman, who plays this kind of nun character, the caretaker of the home for retired bears in Peru, I thought she was by far, in a way, going to be the most annoying part of the film, because I saw she had a guitar and I was like, that means a musical number. And spoiler alert for our, you know, next film that we're going to talk about, I wasn't sure if I'd be huge on that. However, Olivia Colman ends up stealing the show in a lot of ways, pardon the pun, is that really a pun? And it was just genuinely one of the best parts of this film. I mean, I should never have doubted her. So do I recommend this film? Yes. I feel like I have been very lukewarm with my takes today, but you know, sometimes you do have to be lukewarm. And yeah, it's a good film. I would definitely recommend seeing it. There are some very special moments in there that do slightly come close to capturing the magic of the first two films. But like, if you've not seen either of the first two films, what are you doing? Drop everything you're doing right now and go and watch them, because they are truly incredible. And I think the biggest problem with this film is the fact, again, it is a sequel to two of the best films of the last 20 years. On to Wicked 2024!
Are people born wicked? Or do they have wickedness thrust upon them? You're green.
I am.
Welcome, new students, to Shiz University.
Miss Elphaba.
You can room with Miss Galinda.
Oh, popular. I know about popular.
Oh, I saved you some space, by the way.
Do you really think this is fair?
I do not. I was promised a private suite. But thanks for asking.
Please, everyone take your seats. In today's Oz, a real sorcerer who possesses true magic has become all too rare.
Okay, so here we go. Wicked, possibly the most hotly anticipated film of the year. I know this is going to be popular. I stole that from a Letterboxd review. I can't take credit for it. But anyway, I have not seen the original musical. I have pretty much no knowledge of the original musical before going to watch this. I knew the poster. That's pretty much it. I knew the general premise. When this film was getting so much traction, especially with the antics going on in the press junket and interview, which we're not here to discuss. If you want to know more about it, look it up. I decided to read the plot summary of the original play. I didn't think I was going to go see this film at the time, but a lot of my friends really wanted to go see this, so I tagged along. We did the whole thing of, you know, getting dressed up in green and pink. I was by far the most dedicated to the bit. I was dressed up all in neon pink for the whole day before we went and saw this. So, you know, dedication. And yeah, I don't know what I was expecting, really. I, again, I am by no means not a fan of musicals. So one of my favourite films of all time, for example, Sweeney Todd, Demon Bomber of Fleet Street, 2007. Sacha Baron Cohen, the whole cast, Helena Bonham Carter, directed by Tim Burton. Just an absolute doozy of a musical film. Love it. All of the songs I know off by heart. I like to listen to it or revise. I am by no means a stranger to a good musical. Okay, is what I'm saying. I think, and you know, Sweeney Todd, I've seen it performed live here in Cambridge at the ADC, which was great. But before seeing that film, I had never seen anything of Sweeney Todd. So it's not like I can't engage with a musical film unless I've seen the original musical on stage. Like, in fact, the only musical I've seen on stage other than Sweeney Todd, which I saw here, was Matilda when I was 9. So, you know, big diff. So what I'm saying is that I can and I do have the capacity to get involved in a musical film if I am thoroughly engaged enough with it. Here I was not, unfortunately. I think a lot of the reviews are from people who have seen the original musical, who are very invested in it, and they have been absolutely glowing. So if you go to Letterboxd right now, which is the personal review service I use, it has something ridiculous, like a 4.2 out of 5, which is like an average that is crazy and like barely ever exists. No one can agree on anything on like any subsection of the internet. So I thought it was going to be like something truly amazing. Is that my fault for going in with those expectations? Maybe, but also for a film that proclaims to want to do so much, I felt like it did so little. It's 2.5 hours long and it's, you know, you're going into it and you know there's going to be a sequel. It's titled Wicked Part 1 is the full title, I think, that they show during the actual film. It's like June Part 1. They don't actually put that in the title for the first one. Then the second one will have that. The next one's coming out next year, which is, you know, nice. You don't have to wait long for a sequel, I guess. But I don't know if I'm particularly invested in the sequel, to be honest, because it just felt like nothing really happened. When I came out, I think it's really poignant that one of the first things that my friends said to me, you know, my friends who are really invested in the original musical, said was, don't worry, Daisy, there's so much action that happens in the next one. And it's like, well, we're watching this one, though, so surely there should be action in this one. You know, I just felt like it didn't have the full makings of a film. If you cut it down to like 1.5 hours, or better yet, cut down the next one to 1.5 hours, put them both together as a 3-hour epic, I wouldn't mind that at all. And just have a really tight, you know, every single song drives the plot forward, that sort of thing. That's another thing to note. This is a 2.5 hour long film, but the soundtracks, the musical portions, you know, the songs that they're singing, only last 55 minutes. So there's another 1.5 hours of this musical epic where they're not singing. And quite frankly, if you're going to see a musical, I want it to be like maybe 1 hour and 20 minutes of song and then maybe 10 minutes of talking. Like, I want every single song to be like palpably driving the plot forward. There are aspects of this I absolutely loved. So, for example, Ariana Grande as Glinda. She was born to play this role, to quote the review of fellow Cam FM Amelia. Like, she was absolutely born to play this role. The set design, the costume design was out of this world phenomenal. I will not be surprised. Phenomenal? Yes. I will not be surprised if they win an Oscar for this. You know, the artistry was incredible, especially the kind of practical costuming. I loved it. However, as I say, it was not for me. At the end of the day, there were people who loved this film and I don't want to take that away from them. I just didn't quite get on with it. It wasn't my cup of tea. I do love a good musical film. Maybe I just like my musical films a bit more dark, you know, with a bit more murdering and a bit more Stephen Sondheim. Probably that. But yeah, I would recommend it if you're a fan. Definitely watch it if you're a fan of the original, but you don't need me to tell you that. And watch it for the costuming. But don't be surprised if you're like me, kind of left a bit cold by the whole thing. So yeah, there you go.
Daisy's Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings on Cam FM.
Thank you so much yet again for listening to another episode of Daisy's Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings. Or if this was your first time, not to rip off YouTubers, welcome, and hope you enjoyed. Just as a little recap, today we discussed some recent cinema releases, including Smile 2, Gladiator 2, Paddington in Peru and Wicked 2024. Well, they're all 2024 releases. I just feel like you need to say Wicked 2024 because I don't want you thinking I watched the stage show. But you know, you've been listening, you've been very attentive, and I believe in you. If you want to get in touch with the show, let me know your thoughts, comments, feedback. Let me know your thoughts on any of the films we discussed today. You can do so by emailing me at dmmm@camfm.co.uk or getting in touch via my Instagram at Daisy's Magical Mystery Mix, which you should like totes be following anyway for like more updates about my shows and things. Shows, plural. Why, yes, listener, I'll be back on air this Saturday at 6 p.m. for my main music and mumbling show. Well, this is the main mumbling show, but my main music and mystery mix show, Days of Magical Mystery Mix, at 6 p.m. this Saturday. Do come and give us you know, some company. Come and join. I'll be live, so you can send in your messages and I'll be able to respond to them. It's very fun. It's very whimsical. Or alternatively, you can keep the movie magic going by tuning in next Wednesday at 9 a.m. or catching up on my previous shows on the CamFM website, camfm.co.uk/shows. And then you can find my shows via the entertainment tab of Days of Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings. But for now, bye! Okay, bye! I'm going out, bye! Top of the hour now, bye!